Howdy, folks. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John. Oh, and I'm Kathy Shires, alcoholic.
Hey, Kathy.
What's that?
I know. Yes, like, what
does.
Is that little 9-year-old girl doing up there? Is this, am I a child bride?
She looked about 9 when I first met her. We'll get to that. She was not.
We both look 9.
So you want to start with a prayer?
Sure. Yeah. Let's open up the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, so this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and like any Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, we're basically going to tell you our story. Okay, now as we go in through and do that, we're going to weave our understanding of the 12 traditions into our story. And we're going to tell you why the 12 traditions have been such a huge part of our sober married life together and our family life together. And we'll talk about how we met. We've made notes because we've been asked to do this a number of times. And so we started making some notes. Generally speaking, for talks, I'm not much of a note person, but we do find that they're really useful for a workshop. So you want to start with how we met?
Sure.
Okay.
We first met when I had 3.5 years, and John would have had about five years.
No, about the same at the time, right?
Yeah, maybe 4.5 years. And we met at a young people's conference.
Yeah, we were young people.
We were young people. Crazy, sober, young people. And I, at that time, even though I had 3.5 years, I really had the benefit of step none. It is really insane to come to a 12-step program and not do 12 things, but that's what I did. I was a meeting maker. I was a person that the treatment center said, you need to change your playmates, your playgrounds, and your playthings, and I said, check, check, check. What I did not really have was a sponsor that I used. It was just a name only. I did not know anything about our blue book, really. And so I was just kind of young and sober and basically insane. John had been through that period of time, but had actually got in with a group of guys that were meeting once a week in somebody's basement going through the big book in a very smoky room, about 60 dudes. Yeah. And so he was further on in that process. He'd already been through what I was currently in. We spent a weekend in Columbus for a Geeky Paw type thing.
Yeah, this was 1992 in Columbus, Georgia. Into a Georgia Young People's weekend thing and dance, you know. Mm-hmm. There used to be a lot of dances. Not as much dances as there used to be. I think the young people today are missing out.
Yeah. So, but we weren't, neither one of us were living in Columbus. We just spent a great weekend together, a bunch of young people. We did not sleep together. He had a relationship that he talked about a lot.
It wasn't that good of a weekend.
They were like, no. They were like little Mr. and Miss Al-Anon relationship, and he raved about that. And I thought, you know, all the good ones are taken. Clearly, there's another example. And we went our separate ways after the weekend. I did not see him again for about 9 months, and by that time I had moved from South Georgia back to Atlanta. I had started a job, which was amazing because I have 2 felonies on my record. I'm an ex-con, and the fact that I got a career job was astounding. Things looked better in my life than they ever had, and I picked up a 4-year chip from NABA and was drunk the week later.
Wow.
Because alcoholism is not created by the things outside of you, and it cannot be fixed with all these things outside. And so when I saw him 9 months later, I only had 2 months sobriety. And I was like, oh, that's that guy I hung out for the weekend. And he was still dating Miss Al-Anon, but only for like 2 more weeks. Yeah. And then they break up, and it wasn't a bad breakup. It was
a relatively sane breakup, which is the first relatively sane breakup that I had ever had, because I had actually worked the 12 steps by this point. You know, and so I had just about, you know, this much sanity going on in my life.
Right. So then he was like, oh, you know, here's Kathy, you know, whatever. And his roommate took absolute pleasure in saying, yeah, she's only got 2 months now.
Yeah, he totally did. Because there had been a spark when we had met before, you know, but it was a spark that we were, both of us, between the two of us, it was enough sanity that we weren't going to act on that spark because I was involved with somebody, you know, and I was sober enough at that point to not, you know, because we've all done, most alcoholics have had the ace in the hole. That you're just waiting. You know this relationship's lousy. It's going to blow up any second. So you kind of got the ace in the hole over here that you're already sort of working that angle with. So you can immediately jump over here when this one blows up, you know. But I was at least sober enough to be beyond that place.
Right.
And I want to. There's a couple of things that I want to throw out here. Two things. One is we're going to really talk about how the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, if they can keep this worldwide insane fellowship of insane people as one unified organization, they should be able to do the same for a couple of numbskulls in a marriage. Okay? That's the one thing. And the second thing is, though, is that none of what we're going to talk about today in regards to the 12 traditions matters one iota if you haven't done the 12 steps, in my opinion. That I am a person who tries to use a relationship to make me okay. I am a person who tries to use a relationship to fix me. And there's only one thing that fixes this alcoholic, and that's a spiritual experience. It's a result of the 12 steps. If I have that, then I have a chance to do this. But if I don't have that, this ain't going to matter. Right? It just ain't going to matter. So I just want to throw that out there. And also, we are not any kind of professional anythings. Okay? This is
not screw-ups.
Yeah, we're
professional screw-ups.
Well, okay, we're professional screw-ups. Like, but everyone in here qualifies to say that. Okay? But we are not guidance counselors, relationship counselors, or therapists, or any of that shit. Excuse my friend. We are just a couple of numbskulls who were so blessed to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, to have some old-timers who saw where we were going and who were loving enough to use their personal experience to sit us down and share this with us. So we're sharing it with you, you know, and it's hopefully in the same spirit that it was shared with us. And should we tell that story?
Well, we'll just finish this little part.
Okay.
That we hung out as friends as long as we could stand it, which was probably 4 weeks.
That's right.
He's a 13th stepper, so get your pitchforks out after this meeting's done. But in my short little couple of months of sobriety, I had taken a quick inventory, and I don't think I'm a stupid person. I was like, why would you pick up a 4-year chip and within a week be drunk on an airplane? And it's like, well, you never really had a sponsor. You had therapists, and why do you need a sponsor if you got therapists? You never knew anything about the big book, and you never really worked the steps. You kind of worked them off the wall. So you had off-the-wall sobriety. And so I started doing the things that I'm sure I heard in meetings. Nobody I was hanging out with at that time were doing any of that, by the way. You know?
Water seeks its level.
Right. So I started doing that, and so I had a sponsor. We were meeting once a week to go through the big book, but we start dating. And I was about 8 months sober when his lease was up, and they were looking for a house to rent. Wasn't working out well. He came over to tell me about his day, and he said, you know, I could move in here, ha-ha. And I thought, well, I'd never lived with anybody other than family. Or the short period of time by myself.
Roommate.
And so we talked about it that night, and we decided, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. And my sponsor did not think so. She yelled at him outside of a meeting. She told me I was right in the middle of beginning to write my 4-step. I had started putting some pen to paper. She's like, this is going to ruin your sobriety. You're going to stop doing everything, blah, 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 you know. And I understand her fear. That happens a lot, you know. There are some reasons why people will give the advice to stay out of a relationship for a year. That is not our experience. But I basically told my sponsor, we have to agree to disagree. I am going to show you that I still mean business. I want to recover whether I have this relationship or not. And he's moving in. So that's what's happening. She didn't fire me. She said, okay, probably thinking this is never going to work.
But it did get back to the man who was my grand sponsor at the time and his wife who was in Al-Anon. And she was in Al-Anon 25 years. He was in AA 25 years. And they were wonderful, you know, a couple of old-timers in the Atlanta AA scene. And it was Dennis and Barbara Sanfilippo. Some of you older-timers may remember those guys. Dennis passed on about in 2004, and Barbara is still in Al-Anon. She'd moved on, got remarried. But they heard about this, and Dennis, okay, this is old-school AA, okay? Dennis didn't, he didn't ask you to do things. He told you what you were going to do. It was that kind of sponsorship. You know, and I was not even his sponsee. I was his grand sponsee, but it didn't matter. You know, if you were in the sponsorship family, then you were subject to being told what to do by Dennis. Okay? And Dennis called me up one day and said, what are you doing Saturday? And I said, nothing that I know. And he goes, okay, you and Kathy are coming over to our place. And I was like, what do you mean your place? Said, me and Barbara's house. You're coming to our house.
Bring a 12-12.
And bring a 12-12. And we're going to sit down for a couple of hours and talk about what you're doing. Meaning moving in together.
This is terrifying.
And,
I'm sure we're about to be put through a major lecture.
Right.
I've already gotten one from my sponsor.
So I told Kathy, Dennis told us we have to come over and talk about this move-in that we're doing.
Oh.
You know, and so on Saturday or whatever, we showed up at their house at like 1 o'clock. And we sat down, and we both immediately lit a cigarette because we were both still smoking at that time. And they were still smoking. And they had a big AA house where there would be 20 people in their house at any given time. Everyone smoking a cigarette, everyone drinking a cup of coffee and telling a dirty joke. And they sat us down and they basically said, why are you moving in together? And we said, because we love each other. And they said, that's the right answer. That's what they said. And I said, now we're going to teach you how to use
the 12 steps. Are you just shacking up?
Right. Is it just shacking up, right? Are you just shacking up? We're like, no, we love each other. We want to make a life together. Okay, good. Here's how you're going to do it.
Right.
Wow. Here's how you're going to do it.
And
for
so
the next 2 hours, we sat down and we went through the 12 traditions. And they shared story after story out of story out of their lives.
Which was pretty amazing for us because there are many, many marriages between our parents. Many.
Yes.
His dad's been married and was married and divorced 4 times.
Yeah. 6 marriages between my 2 parents.
And then
and
2 on my
2,
side.
You know, and it would have been more if your mom had survived, but she died of alcoholism, so.
Right. So we didn't have a lot of tools. And we had had lots of relationships, although his last one had lasted 1.5 years. Prior to that, much like me, most of the relationships were like 3-month wonders. You know, you meet a boy meets girl on AA campus. You fall madly in love. Oh my God! God sent this person to me. It's wild. It's passionate. It's crazy in no time, and then it's over before you know it. And before it's over, you know,
resentments and there's.
Well, I walked around with the ace in the hole. I had the
penis
in a glass case, break in case of emergency. I kept lots of dudes around. You know, and so I had no idea what I was doing. So the fact that they presented the traditions for us, I mean, I actually had heard the traditions read, you know, for nearly 5 years at that point, and I really didn't see how they really applied to me. I really thought those were for the secretary and the treasurer and the whatever, like, meh, 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 meh. I started listening to the traditions with a different set of ears. Because now they have something to do with me.
Right.
I mean, later on, I understand how much they have to do with the AA group. But back then, I really started studying traditions because I thought it would keep my relationship together. You know. So we'll start with tradition one and see what they had to say about that. So tradition one, the short form is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And then for the long form, in some cases I'm just reading a portion of it because it's applying to relationships. Long form, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows closely afterward. I think that was the point.
Yeah, so the first tradition, is, as in AA, in a family, in a marriage, in a household, it's about unity. It's about unity. What am I doing to contribute to the unity, or perhaps even more important, what am I doing to contribute to the disunity of this household, of this little family unit? It also means that each of us, and it starts off when we didn't have any children when we first got together. Today we have a 21-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 15-year-old. So initially it was just the two of us, but later the kids came along, and when they got to a reasonable age, they had a little bit of a say-so in the unity. And sometimes the kids will bust up the unity, won't they? Especially when they're teenagers of a family. And that's not allowed to happen. You know, and sometimes that might mean some pretty drastic steps have to be taken. And we've known families that have had to do those kinds of things. But unity is the hallmark of tradition one. And so, just like in Alcoholics Anonymous, the very first thing that we all need to do is make sure that AA stays unified. And none of us needs to take any action that might greatly affect the unity of this amazing fellowship that we're all dependent upon for staying sober.
Yeah, much like for the AA group, tradition one states what the whole goal is, right? Kind of like the steps, step one is about the whole goal, is to remain sober, basically, right? And then everything else supports that. Unity is the goal. The next 11 traditions are things that will mess up the unity, right? So if unity is your goal, some of the things they asked us was, do you consider yourself a unit, right? You are now individuals, but you have then come together as a unit. You know, you don't have to necessarily agree on everything, but you're going to have to make a lot of sacrifices for the unity. You are now part of a family. Even though we weren't engaged when we were moving in together, they said, you're setting up a family. So, you know, there were several things that come afterwards that were sort of like personal sacrifices, and so that we now have this unit together. And I don't think I forgot to mention that, you know, we've been together 25 years and married 23, which is a miracle.
Yes, sir.
Total miracle. We are living, breathing proof that this stuff works. It's not like we just did this and it's been 3 years. It's been a really long time.
And we're both insane alcoholics. I mean, you'll hear my story tonight and some of you have heard Kathy's. And we're insane alcoholics. I mean, we are self-contained units. And for two units to come together for unity is a really weird and odd thing. It doesn't happen all by itself. It takes a little bit of, like Kathy said, like sacrifice.
Especially when we are hardwired as alcoholics to go, what am I getting out of this? What about me?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever in any area of my life, and especially in my home, when I am asking the question, what am I getting out of this? The answer is always the same. Not enough. It ain't right. The minute that my focus is turned on me and how I feel and this, I start coming up with problems that didn't exist before. And so the good news is, even though I've had to make a lot of personal sacrifices along the way, everything that I need, and quite frankly, most of the things I want, have been taken care of just fine. But the moment that I start looking in that direction, man, I start feeling the disease of separation. We have disease of separation and a disease of perception. My perception is, you're not doing enough for me, you're not doing it right for me, you know, this kind of thing. Martyrdom, big time martyrdom. And when I start turning it back towards, like an AA, towards service, it's fine. It's totally fine. So let's read the second one. All right, tradition two. I'm just going to read the short form only, because as we know, it is longer. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
So the big thing about this tradition for me is that who's in charge of the household, right? You know, if you're from a real traditional background, the man is in charge of the household. If you're from a real modern background, maybe the woman's in charge of the household. In our household, there's one ultimate authority. And it's not me, it's not her. It's God as we understand him. And when God is the center of the household, and God's the ultimate authority, and my prayer is, you know, God help me to contribute and rather than see what I can get, like Kathy was just saying, and hers is the same, which they're not always going to be. We're not always going to be on exactly the same place spiritually, right, every day. Some days I'm going to be wherever I'm at, it's not going to be very good, and she's going to be doing really well. Other days I'll be doing really well, and she'll be off on a tangent. Some days we'll both be off on tangents. Those are not good days. But ultimately, God is the ultimate authority in the household. And so no one is in charge. You know, and I get in a lot of trouble when I try to get in charge. Mm-hmm. Just like every other area of my life, by the way. If I'm in charge of things, I have a long history that says when I'm in charge, things don't go well. Yet I still have this alcoholic, ego-driven obsession to take charge and do what needs doing or what I think needs doing or make it look the way I think it needs to look. And that's still there. You know, I've been sober 30 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's still there. You know, so I don't know that it ever goes away. I think the best we can do is to try to humble ourselves and ask for guidance.
Yeah. But each of us is a trusted servant, however.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. I have to be looking at how do I serve this household? Now, of course, then that included kids and this sort of thing. I don't know about you guys, but it seems like most of the women I sponsor are like me, and we are really good at scorekeeping. I always have a running tab, and I'm sure this one definitely doesn't come up to snuff. And I'm thinking, okay, If we're each a trusted servant, we should each be putting in the same amount. I'm like the fairness police, like the Justice League, you know, and trying to keep score and who's doing the most and how's it working out. And because I'm a martyr, and I think, you know, I'm just a servant. You know, I just do so much around here. He doesn't do anything. You know, my tendency is to get into that place and to constantly score keep. What Dennis and Barbara said is, no, your job, pointing to each of us, your job is to put in 100% and expect zero back.
It's not 50-50.
And if you're both doing that, everything is fine, right?
Yeah, 50-50 means two people are half-assing it.
Okay? Right.
And it should be 100, but I'm really only responsible for my 100. Right. I'm not saying, I got 100 and you got 25. You know?
You could never say
I'm responsible. I could never say that. There's no scorekeeping going on.
I've wanted to say that many times. Right?
But I'm responsible for what I bring. And I'm not responsible for pointing out what the other person is failing to bring. They will either figure that out, and we'll get into this more, I mean, with the whole spiritual self-supporting thing, but I'm not responsible for totting up where she is failing her spiritual program of action, nor is she for me.
Right.
You know, that kind of nagging will drive people insane, and it's counterproductive.
Well,
my sponsor Jerry would always say, John, you think that's the most helpful thing you could say? When I would say, I'm going through this, and I want to tell her this, do you think that's the most helpful thing? You know?
Right, and one of the things with the score keeping and stuff like that, I just now messed up what I was going to say.
I messed it up for you, baby.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was now. Anyway. This is it. Some of the women in the room may relate to this. Because I sometimes think it's just a fundamental difference between most guys and most women. That's not everybody. Is that I had lots of conversations with my sponsor and my sponsees with me that were sort of under the thing of, he never helps me around this house. You know, now in my case, I was a stay-at-home mom for pretty much, except when we first got together, I had that job. But we started having kids pretty early. Thank God for that now. I still got my whole life ahead of me. They're getting out of the house. I felt like, you know, he was the major breadwinner. He was bringing in the money and working all day. Now, does that mean that he gets to come home and just sit around and never help? Probably not. But my domain was the household. If I really felt like I needed help, my guy's a good guy. But I have to ask. We all expect people to be mind readers, and they should just walk in the room and say, and there have been studies about this. You mess up different things in this room, give a guy and a girl 5 minutes in there to, like, mentally think everything that needs to be done, and you'll come out with a very different list. A woman will come up with a list this long, and the guy's got a few. Right? And so, but if I just ask, you know, he's a good guy. And I may have to give him a little bit of notice. Like, hey, how about, this is Tuesday, how about this Saturday we clean out the garage? I'll give you a little bit of a heads up, right? And we try to work it out. When I got sober again this time, we'll talk just briefly about my relapse coming down the pipe, but one of the things is that I got to a third step and my sponsor said, all right, let's put it out on the table. What's your fear about step three? I go, well, I've been in AA so long that it's not that I'm going to have to, like, sell them all my possessions and move to Africa and dig ditches and all this kind of stuff. I said, I honestly think that God probably wants me to stay right where I am, married to the same man, in the same house, with the same children, homeschooling one of them, having a child with special needs, all this kind of stuff, and be okay with it. And she said, are you willing? I said, I want to leave a lot. I often think, how far does this road actually go? I think I'll just keep going. You know, and run away. And she said, you know, willing doesn't mean want to. If that's what it really meant, and that's where God really wanted you to be and do his will, are you willing? I guess was my answer to it. And I had exactly the same experience, and it falls directly under this, all these jobs to do in the house and scorekeeping. I had the experience that Chuck Chamberlain did, that I was right. I end up staying, I'm still in the same house with the same kids, the same man, same job. You know, the kids are a little older, two are moved out now, but that's only been real recent, within the last year. And I thought, I've got it better than most people. Nothing had changed on the outside at all. In fact, in some ways, there was more chaos because my boys got to be teenagers, and there came a lot of chaos with that. But the whole thing was an inside job. And when I stopped looking at how people are treating me and how much they're putting in and scorekeeping, man, do I problems instantly melt away. Just get up, ask God to be of service, and get on with it. Right? If you want that kitchen clean, go do it now. And it's like, man, do the problems go away? It's amazing. And we were taught, you know, I can count 25 years we've been together, and I can count on two hands how many fights we've had. I kid you not. Right?
Very few.
Very, very few.
Very few. But there are days where both of us have a bad spiritual hair day. Those aren't usually, those are not usually, but they're rare. I mean,
we can get irritated with one another.
Yes, irritation is not working.
And I tend to, if I have to do the housework, I tend to do it like clean the dishes, you know, like this. But it's just enough that I come back, and we were taught not to go to bed angry. Get some space. Give the other person some space. Don't forge in there and say, no, 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 we must talk about this right now. The big book's really clear. Sometimes you have to say, we're getting heated. Walk away. I don't really say it like that, but get some space, come back, and then have a talk after that. And many of those talks, you know, Barbara and Dennis taught us about starting conversations like that, like, I don't know how to say this, but. Or, it really kind of hurts me when this happens, you know, instead of, you know, it really pisses me off when you are asking for a fight.
Right.
You are asking for it. You immediately put somebody on the defensive. It's not nothing you say after that matters because they are like this.
Yeah. Here's another one that's not good. That was stupid.
That's one of my favorite words. Yeah, that's not helpful. It's
that's
not helpful to call people.
The most helpful thing you could have said, John.
Thank you, John.
Right? That's the response that I'm, oh, thank you for telling me how stupid I am. Tell me how I can better myself.
Yeah, and in order to have, just like at a business meeting, to have an informed group conscience, there must be communication. I find that that's where the most confusion and the most problems first arise, is not talking to one another about it. Right.
Well, if she's going to be like that, then I'll be like this. And there's no communication has to happen. And then if we're in that place, then maybe she's like, well, if he's going to be like that, then I'm going to be like this.
Yeah.
And there's still no communication happening. And now two people are on some kind of crazy alcoholic emotional program, you know, that can be avoided if there's just like, hey, I think we should talk about this thing with the house, you know. And see what, you know, where we're at with it. You
sometimes
know?
Sometimes John may be just in a bad place. Maybe he had a bad time with his boss. I don't know this. He came in. He's clearly not, I mean, he's pretty happy-go-lucky, I must say. I'm the one that's moody as can be and hard to live with. But, you know, there have been times when something's like that, and you think, well, my immediate thing is he mad at me? Because I always think about me.
What did
right?
I do?
What did I do, right? Well, I just think, and I have an argument, and it's totally fancy. It never even occurred. I don't even know what's going on with him. So I've counseled my sponsees at work or whatever, sometimes put your neck out there and say, have I done something? Because I'm feeling some separation here, whatever, you know. I just want to make sure if I've done something that I'd like to make it right. Just stick it out there, you know, and then we can start having a conversation about it, even if you have no idea what it is. All right, so tradition three.
Yeah.
Which is pretty easy. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And the part of the long form that we use is membership should never depend on money or conformity.
Right. And this is really about, we've got some pretty, how many people in here have in-laws, stepchildren, step-parents, you know, anything like the big complicated family situation. So everyone is equally a member of the family if you're born into it or if you're married into it. You know, and sometimes that married into it part is hard, you know. God, I mean, we could have a long, we could probably take more time than
it's
we have.
Not with our own children, you know? but parents.
Yeah. So, you know, I have an alcoholic stepfather who basically, you know, over a long period of time completely destroyed my relationship with my mother to the point where the last 7 years of her life, I couldn't even call her. I had to call him. He had to call his phone to talk to her. But see, my mom was a very unwell Al-Anon who stopped going to Al-Anon. She remarried a drunk. And she became so under that drunk's thumb that you had to call the drunk to talk to her.
But if he was mad at you, he wouldn't answer the phone.
But he won't answer the phone call. For sure. So anyway, those are grown people doing that. You know what I'm saying? And so it's not my place to hire a hitman. You know.
Although we thought about it.
Those are the kind of thoughts you can have at 20 and 25 years sober sometimes, mm-hmm. folks. So I won't ask anyone to raise her hand who's contemplated murder in Alcoholics Anonymous. anyway.
One of the things they were talking about when starting the family is that, you know, membership to this family involves commitment. As I said, I've always had that penis in the glass case. Never really was in 100% in any relationship because I'm trying to clear up the wreckage of my future. And I'm certain that this whirlwind's great right now, but it's probably going to go south. I have to watch you all the time and be on point because you might be talking to somebody else or doing something. And this is before they had cell phones. You had to do old school stalking of people, you know, like hiding in the bushes, driving past their house, hanging up, you know, that kind of stuff. Yes. Insane for sure. So this was really important when we came out of this traditions thing. It's like, how committed are we to this? Like, give it everything you got. If it fails, at least not like I had learned in therapy about how, you know, my own selfishness and self-centeredness destroyed relationships. I had a lot of knowledge of that condition, but I had no power behind it to do anything different. And the truth was, is I wasn't really all in anyway.
Right.
Because I'm too afraid of being all in. That's too vulnerable for me. But this, where when she talked about the commitment, that's where I had to get all in. No feet out the door. Right.
I got to be all in. If it fails, first of all, there's no guarantee. And I don't want anyone walking in here today and say, oh, my God, if we knew John and Cherry's magic approach from the 12 conditions, our relationship would be so happy. Less No, there's no guarantee. People change, you know. You know, Kathy will talk about her relapse. She had a relapse after about 10 years into this deal. And that could have made her change a lot more than she did. And thank God that she didn't. But there are no guarantees. But here's the deal, folks. I don't want this thing to blow up for lack of trying. And a lot of my relationships fail for lack of an honest try. You know, either I wasn't all in or she wasn't all in. More often than not, we both weren't all in. And we both were playing games.
And what that really boils down to is integrity, is being of one mind. You know, I am real apt to tell you one thing and be doing something else. You know what I mean? Living a double life. I had to get all in. And that, I mean, there's a lot of ways that happened. Not only later on we talk about bank accounts, stuff like that, but also my behavior with other men. And like I said, I had lots of guy friends. And I didn't necessarily cheat on people I was with, but I knew who the next one was going to be,
right.
You know. And I had to stop this kind of foolishness. A lot of my behavior had to say, would you do what you're about to do right now? Would you do that with your sponsor and John standing right next to you? Usually the answer was no, I wouldn't quite do that. You know, it doesn't mean we're both flirtatious people and kind of out there or whatever, but you know when you're crossing a line. And I also know when I'm planning to cross a line. You know, I don't always know what the next right thing to do is, but I can pretty well tell you what the next wrong thing to do is. That is really easy to quantify.
I like the question, would I do this if she was standing here?
Right.
It's a good kind of, you know, barometer check.
All right. So, tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And then part of that long form, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience.
Right. So in the family, what this means is we're an autonomous family unit. Okay? And AA, what it means is if your group wants to have, you know, decaf and regular, you can do that. If you don't want to have coffee, you want to have tea, you can do that. Every group gets to decide the basic way that its group operates. You know what I'm saying? What time we start, what kind of meeting we hold. We are only going to have a big book study. We are only going to have a speaker meeting.
Whether we do chips or not.
Similarly, in a family, we get to decide what kind of family we're going to be. And we don't have to listen to everything that the grandparents have to say on both sides of the family about, oh, this really comes into play big time when you have kids. Right, mm-hmm. You cannot get enough good advice about how to raise your baby, can you? Those folks in here have had children now. You know, every aunt and uncle and
but also culturally, what a marriage is supposed to look like. I mean, the reality is that for 20 years, I have not slept in the same bed at night with this man. Because he snores like you would not believe.
No, she snores.
Oh, please. Now, we have had to go out of town together, and I've had to shove the earplugs so far I need like a surgical instrument to remove them. And some people would say, that's weird. That's right. How can you have a marriage like it's supposed to be this way? Well, who told you that? Society says that maybe is the way it's supposed to be.
That's right.
It doesn't mean we don't have closeness. It doesn't mean that we don't have sex. It doesn't mean anything except for we're both going to get good sleep tonight, by God. That's all it means. And I have a house that's big enough where I have space to do that. That's all it means. And so there are things like that because, I mean, God, with raising children and having families, not only do you get the advice of family members or friends or whatever, but society as a whole has some sort of old idea about the way things should be.
Right. And at the end of the day, if we get to make our decisions about how we're going to do our family. And now see, it's society, but it's also my untreated alcoholism. It's my fear. Right? What would people think if they knew that we were sleeping in separate bedrooms? Oh, they would start talking. They would say, John and Kathy's marriage is on the rocks. It's just a matter of time. You know? And they'll, whatever. Will be talked about. Wow, that would be terrible to be talked about, honey.
Well, and then our oldest son, who's 21, was definitely the most challenged growing up. From the time that he was 5 years old, we had seen psychologists for him, trying to get some ideas, have him tested, you know, and he comes out as being potentially ADD, mostly oppositional defiance disorder.
He's a difficult, highly intelligent, highly energetic, kinetic insanity.
The doctor did not recommend medication for him. I thought if a medication will help, I mean, a voodoo doll will help. I will stick it full of pins. I am losing my mind here. And that was more because I didn't have a program. My program is slipping at that time. But the schools felt very different because they want a compliant child. They want that child on medication, so they go about their business like everybody else. And I said, if you could tell me, because by this time I was kind of convinced, because my husband was dead set up against no way. No way are we going to give him speed. This is a problem, you know. And so I kind of was on that in that camp then, and I had to be my son's best advocate. And what we ended up doing ultimately, rather than putting him on medications or whatever, is he came home to be homeschooled. And he was homeschooled 4 years out of his 12. The first time, I lost my ever-loving mind. The second time he came home, I was terrified that the same thing would happen again. And I would ultimately not be able to handle it and would ultimately relapse because life has become so pointy that I got to take the edge off. But you know, the realm of the spirit is the realm of the do-overs, and I got a do-over, and I was able to do it a second time with him home and stay sober through that. Was it easy? No way, you know, but there was a lot of people like at large that would say, well, what about his social skills? You know,
he's not going to be properly socialized if he's homeschooled, right?
Yeah. And John would say, you know, I always went to school and I still was a loner.
I was an antisocial loner, loser, alcoholic.
Right. So, and how much are you allowed to socialize at school anyway? They always told me to shut up. Stop passing notes. Stop, you know, I wanted to talk with everybody all the time. Apparently you had to sit there and listen.
The point is that we were able to through that and around those kinds of issues and experiences, come up with what we eventually came up with what we were going to do. You know, and a lot of people disagreed with it. You know, again, when it comes to like families and, you know, your relatives, your extended family, there's lots of judgment about how you're doing this or how you're doing that or how you're raising your kids. And,
like an AA group, a family has the right to be wrong. So it was worth a try anyway. And it ended up being the best thing for him. He was, I mean, literally 2 years here at this school, 2 years home, 2 years out of the school, 2 years home. He never could stay anywhere until he got to high school, and he was at a high school for misfits. And he stayed there for 4 straight years and graduated.
And the other son dropped out of high school.
Right.
So, like his father, I was so proud.
Which I had a really bad, a terrible old idea about that. I was like the girl who went to school and was in the honor societies and did really well. And to me, this is, we're just giving into his laziness, allowing this and all this. The truth is, he's fine. He did get a GED. I'm like, great, you're graduated. And he's a professional actor, so who cares anyway? He has no intention of going to college. It's not his thing, so it's fine. And just know that under the whole thing about autonomous, we are autonomous within our own family, too. We each have our own sort of interests. You know, he likes to play guitar, and I took my son, he's an actor. Well, I took him out to L.A. twice, and I separated the family for him to go audition and get an agent and a manager in L.A., and we were out there twice for like 3 months at a time. Now, if it's threatening the unity of the family as a whole, now that's a problem. If I said, you know what, check it, I'm going for the next 3 years to L.A., I'm sure you'll be fine with the mother, too, and the house.
Yeah.
That probably wouldn't work. For a short period of time, and with a lot of extra help from the outside, he was able to keep that household going,
right. And
we could help Zach pursue his dream, and he's still a professional actor today and doing pretty well for himself. But if my personal interest, like I've known, I don't know if it's so much women, I've known some guys that like loved golfing so much, they were never at home. Right? Or they love some certain aspect that they work all day, they come home for like 2 seconds and they're out. I've known people that have actually lost marriages because they did so much AA stuff all the time to the detriment of their own family. Like, there's got to be a level here, you know. It's probably pretty selfish if you got young kids and one or both of you is out 7 nights a week. Hello? You know, so there's a certain amount that you have to, again, consider the unity and consider that my personal interests, even though we like to support each other in that, cannot overtake the unity of the home, you know. And if it starts becoming a problem, we got to take a look at it. All right. So.
Tradition five?
Yep, tradition five. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's the whole thing.
And the key words here are spiritual entity. Our marriage is a spiritual entity. It's not a contract. You know, we do not have a prenuptial agreement, by the way. I know a lot of people would disagree with that, and that's fine. You're autonomous, and you can do it however you like to do it. We did not do that. I want guarantees. I want guarantees that she's going to stay and she's going to do this and I'm going to do that and we're going to have this thing. And there's all these guarantees and rules and we're going to check all these boxes. And what I really want is I don't want it to ever break up. I want to be safe, you know. And so I cling and I grab and I do all this. Again, there's no guarantees, guys. But it's a spiritual entity. If I treat it like a spiritual entity, at least I will be contributing to the spiritual entity. You know, think if I treat it like a grasping, fearful, self-centered, paranoid alcoholic, well, guess what I'm contributing now? I'm not contributing to, I'm contributing to its dissolution.
And because now, we should have prefaced this. We take people through these in our home a lot of times. It has been done more formally like this, recorded a couple of times. But a lot of it is like we got a few couples that are getting engaged and wanting to, and so we'll bring them in the house. It's a lot more informal. We don't do this with like one of our sponsees who's marrying somebody not in a 12-step program. Because you're kind of talking about language like it's just, they both either got to be like an AA or AA Al-Anon, something like that. So we're all kind of on the same page. We have a general idea of the traditions and the steps and all that. Our main purpose individually is to serve God and serve our AA group. And we support each other in that. We kind of give each other a heads up like, hey, it's kind of fifth step time. I got like 3 people I got to get through fifth step. So you may have to take a little bit of the bulk of time on the weekends.
Like holding the fort down.
Looking after our special needs child so that I can get through these things. And we do that for each other.
Yeah.
And our service work to AA and to God has extended to taking people through the traditions in their home. It's about caring our message, basically, of what happened with us and what has worked really well. So that we extend to that, too.
Yeah, Kathy is currently on the Atlanta Roundup Committee. There's a lot of work that goes into being on a committee like that, as some of y'all in here know, which means that I have to adjust certain nights, you know, my schedule to make sure that I'm home because she's like on Wednesday, and this Wednesday she's got this Atlanta Roundup thing. you know, and then she's got on a Friday night, she has this event. Well, there was one out here in Douglasville a little while ago, right? Down here at the Baptist Church. So, you know, there's things like that. We support each other in AA. So basically, I'm doing service work for AA by freeing her up to go do service work for AA. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's the way that
right.
I look at it. You know, and vice, and fist steps are the worst. Right? We all know this about sponsors. We love to, we sponsor because we need to and we want to and we love to and we have to, right? But fist steps just suck.
They take a long time.
They just take That's a long all. Time. They take 5 or 6 or 7 hours, sometimes multiple days. I mean, it's like, you know, but, that's the reality. That's my reaction to a fifth step, you know. I'm self-centered by nature, folks. I don't like giving up my time.
Yeah, the Braves game's on.
The Braves are killing it right now. You know?
All right. So if anybody feels like they have to go get some coffee or go to the bathroom, I get that, you know, it's hard to sit for a really long time. But just because it's being recorded, we're just going to keep moving. So please feel free. It's not going to...
You won't offend us.
No, definitely not. Okay, so Tradition 6. An AA group on never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige. Divert us from our primary purpose. And that's enough for that.
Mm-hmm. This is about separating the material from the spiritual.
What's the biggest thing that couples fight about?
Money.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
So it was suggested to us by Dennis and Barbara when we started on this journey, you know, 25 years ago. And this is because this is what they did. They said, we don't have his and hers bank accounts in this family. There is only one bank account. It has both our names on it. And we put every bit of money in this one account, and then we have to talk to each other and figure out how to spend it, how not to spend it. You know what I'm saying? But there's not my money and your money. It's going to now be unity, and it's going to now be our money.
That was part of the commitment and going all in.
And we did this. This is crazy. We did this before we were even engaged.
Mm-hmm.
We had... pulled our money, and we had a joint bank account, and you know it was John.
This was the big sticking point, by the way. I went home like
it was John Shires and Catherine Crow, joint bank account, and I think the people who set it up at the bank were even like,
at the time he was starting in grad school, or about to start grad school, so he was a lowly. Lab technician at Emory, and again, I had a career job.
Yeah, I was making about not quite $20,000 a year, and she was making about $32,000, something like that, $1,000 a year.
Right, but covering most of the bills, and I also had most of the debt.
Right, and that's the other thing is you know, if you join together, you join your resources, you also join your debt.
Right.
And that was another thing.
Right.
And she was still on parole, right, or responsible for your...
Mm-hmm.
Incarceration there, so she was paying $100 a month to the federal government.
Right.
You know, that was now our debt.
But the thing about it is that now that it was not my money I'm making, it's the household's money, I think long and hard and then would talk to him before I go off and go shopping.
Right. I don't just come home with a new $500 guitar and say, honey, check it out!
Right.
Because her reaction is not that to the new $500 guitar.
And I always like to tell this story because I think it's really funny that... We decided to do it. Okay, we prayed about it. We talked about it. Okay, we decided to do it. You joined bank accounts. And in very short order, John used to like having poker games with people in AA. And so he said, I'd really like to go play poker with the guys this Saturday night or whatever. And I said, well, how much are you taking? He said, well, I'm going to take like $200. And I thought, okay, if he loses it, he loses it. That's enough to have fun with. And I had a friend in town, so we were doing whatever we were doing. And I get a call from him. Right about midnight that said, hey, you know, we're having a great time. I'm probably going to be, honestly, another hour or two. Don't wait up. You know, I'll try to be as quiet as possible. Love you. Good night. Okay, fine. So the next morning I wake up and go to the bathroom, and he's taken his keys and his wallet and put them on the sink and went to bed. And I go, oh, you know, because I'm nosy. I go through your stuff. I open up the wallet and thought, I wonder how he did. You know, I see a bunch of green. I'm like, oh, that's really good. And right behind it, the last is an ATM slip where he took out another $200 when he made that call to me. Oh.
Old habits die hard.
That's one of those fights on the hands.
That's one of those, right.
That's the first real one we have had.
First big one we ever had.
Ooh, yeah. I was
but
hot.
And what was behind it was, well, it's my money. I earned this money. See, we'd already pulled our money.
Right.
You know, and I remember my sponsor chewing my ass out about that.
Right.
I'm saying, see, he goes, what other guy at that poker game has pooled money? And there weren't any. You know, he said, you know, who are you hanging out with? Who are you running with? You know?
Right.
And by the way, it wasn't that I stopped playing poker. I don't play poker that much. I played poker last night, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. first time in about 4 or 5 years. It's a spiritual thing. You know, it's an integrity violation. You know, to
being of one mind, yeah. doing what you said you're going to do. If you lost your butt and all the money's gone, like, put your tail between your legs and go home. Unless you call and say, can I please? I mean, you know, be honest
just
about it.
$200 more,
honey. And we both like to go to Vegas and gamble, so I get that, you know. The other thing was when I was on a business trip from when we weren't engaged yet, and I had to go to North Carolina on a business trip for a week. Hmm. And that week, some pretty cool things happened. He got a call. Not only did he buy me an engagement ring, because I kept saying, I'm not moving out of state for you to start grad school without a ring, because I ain't going to be the dumb girl that gets stuck in another town. And I've got a job here, and like, I'm
they were
just
all not. Those were reasonable reasons.
And so I didn't know he bought the ring, but that's one cool thing that came to pass. But he also got a call from Yale University. Now, he had been on several interviews for grad school at different places. I'm pretty sure we were going to go to Michigan was kind of where he had been offered a place. But, like, right out of the blue at the lab, a guy from Yale calls and says, have you picked a school yet? Would you like to come here? Literally like that. No interview or anything. And he basically said, wow, that's pretty amazing. Wow, let me talk to my fiancé and I'll get back to you. He goes,
yeah, the guy was...
I'm sorry, did you not hear? I'm so-and-so from Yale. Like, really kind of pompous, you know. And he said, I understand, but I don't make unilateral decisions. Like, I got to talk to my fiancé about that. Of course, he calls me that evening in the hotel room, tells me about it. I'm like, oh, my God, call him back right now. Tell him you'll go. Oh, my, are you crazy? You know, immediately. But he took the time to tell me about that. So he didn't seek some kind of power and prestige for getting a doctorate from Yale and say, to heck with you, I'm going to do what I want, right? I mean, these are some of those building blocks of having a good relationship. And even though he referred to me as his fiancé, he had not yet asked me.
She didn't know she's my fiancé.
Right. Right.
But again, it's no unilateral decision making.
Right.
You know?
That we come together like in a business meeting. And, you know, business meetings can be trying at times. Tradition 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And then part of the long form, experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as feudal disputes over property, money, and authority.
Right. So the self-supporting at the level of the family is really more of a spiritual self-supporting thing. Okay? You can't have one person in the house with a kick-ass program who's really involved and the other person's just sort of floating along on their coattails. That might work for a minute, but it's not a long-term basis for a successful relationship. You know, if this thing is going to work, I have to have a spiritual program of action that I am practicing as a way of life, and she has to have a spiritual program. And now, if we're both doing that, we can have this thing here together, right? But those two, if either one of us have fallen down, it's most likely just not going to work.
And we're not sponsoring each other.
Right. We're not. No. Nope. No, right. No.
We do talk a lot.
Yeah.
We do talk a lot about those issues. But I have to have a personal sponsor. And my sponsor's getting to hear all my stuff. Right? And I don't need to bring a lot of the stuff against him to him. I mean, I got to go there. So then I can have a constructive conversation here. But we talk a lot about things in our home group and, you know, I'm having this kind of issue with a sponsee, and I kind of keep it general. But, you know, we do bounce ideas off each other, but not in lieu of having a sponsor.
Right. And what you never do is point out somebody else's spiritual failings, you know.
Have you called your sponsor about that?
Yeah.
You're just asking for an argument, right?
Right. We're doing it just...
I mean, sometimes I think through the years it's like, you know, what did Jerry have to say about that?
Yeah.
You know, but usually it's because he said he talked to Jerry,
mm-hmm.
not because I'm trying to inch him towards, like, calling him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Tradition 7 is the one that I broke hook, line, and sinker. Hugely so. When he got asked to go to Yale, we started moving. We lived 3 years in Connecticut, then we went to London, England for 4 years, and then came back full circle to Atlanta, Georgia. And each time I moved, I thought I had to have a sponsor in the new place. And each time they didn't do AA right. And each time I couldn't have told you. And actually, if you ask him, do you meet a woman that could have sponsored her? And he was like, not exactly. What I didn't realize is I could be sponsored long distance. I mean, even with a time difference. And it wasn't like we had Skype or anything. I still could have made it work. But in no time, I'm basically being sponsored by an idiot. I'm only bouncing my stuff off my own insane mind. I'm amassing lots of self-pity, martyrdom, anger, and it's just getting swept under the rug because it's not eating my lunch every moment of every day. It occurs one day, I feel like I'm losing my mind. These two boys that are like 1 and 3 are driving me absolutely crazy. And then I go to bed and the next day I'm kind of okay, right? No harm, no foul, right? Keep moving. You do that enough, and now you're walking around this gigantic carpet where everything's been pushed under. I needed to write a 10th step. I needed inventory. I needed to make amends. I needed God in my life. And even though I was, at the time, chairperson of my home group, sponsoring some gals, taking them through the big book, married to John, I was using pills and about 25 a day. It didn't start off that way. It never does. It just wanted to take that edge off. And when I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism, by God, life becomes so pointy, I must take the edge off.
A lot of edges to take off.
My alcoholism demands treatment, you know, and I'm either going to treat it with some spiritual principles here and with a program, or I'm going to find some other way. And I'm sure before I crossed that line at 10 years and secretly relapsed and opened that door, I was doing, you know, go shopping to fix it. I mean, lots of things, you know. And so I totally fell down on Tradition 7 because I wasn't taking care of my business, right? And so it's a lot easier to stay sober than to get sober. It was very, very difficult to come back. And nobody caught me or anything. Like, literally, when I had had enough, I sat him down to tell him about it, right? And so it was up to me to finally get a sponsor. And mine lives in Virginia, so she's long distance. Okay. When I had to do a fifth step, I flew there to do it with her in one day. Mine was more like 10 hours. This is how much stuff I had. And so we started on this thing, and it works just fine. I just got to take care of my own business. And all during that time, when I was suffering from untreated alcoholism, once I picked up some pills, I probably look a lot better. Because my alcoholism is being treated now.
She had a solution again for a minute.
Right.
Things were getting kind of ugly. They're getting kind of gritty. Sometimes you chalk it up to, well, we've got these three insane children, you know, and life is a bit grizzy, you know, gritty and busy and, you know, whatever. But, like, it was only in retrospect after she had told me what had been going on. Because
yeah.
It was totally under the radar. I had never had any idea, not even the slightest idea, that she had relapsed, you know.
And he called his sponsor during those times of me being just crazy before I ever picked up the medication. And, like, I don't know what to do about her.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, how many people you sponsor? Go get two more.
That's exactly right.
He said, you've got to leave her be.
Yeah, stop paying attention to her and start paying attention to your spiritual program of action and let whatever is going to happen, happen. What might happen is your marriage might break up. But if that's the way it's going to go, you worrying about it ain't going to help. You know? I can't control that shit. That's,
and decreasing the amount of AA work in order to try to tend to this relationship and somehow fix me was surely not going to
work. Yeah, let me dump off a couple of sponsees and work on her.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a recipe for success.
Right. Whew. All right. So Tradition 8, this is just the short form. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers.
We don't take a professional or therapeutic stance or approach to our relationship, okay? There was no shortage of varying different professional opinions about how to be married, about how to have a loving and supporting and nurturing relationship. There are probably the sheer tonnage of books that you could go buy on these subjects. We're not here to tell anybody to do that or to not do that. We're not trying to have an unrealistic, real boats rock, okay, folks? Real boats rock. We're not trying to have some, oh, everything is so perfect and our flawless little shiny life type relationship. I don't think that exists. And I think we do have this idealized version of what a marriage or a relationship is supposed to look like sometimes. And, you know, I think we can get pretty goofy trying to attain this thing that doesn't exist. And then constantly feel like I'm falling short like I'm not doing well enough, or our marriage doesn't look like it should, and our marriage doesn't look like what this shiny person on daytime television says it's supposed to look like, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're not, that's not what we're shooting for. We have a very flawed, very human, very alcoholic relationship. And there's things about our family that lots of families would probably think were really disturbing. You know, we've got a big throw pillow in our living room that says F-U-C-K on it in big cursive letters. You know? That's the kind of family
we're autonomous.
We're an autonomous unit. You know? We do put that pillow away when certain people come to visit. But we just kind of have this eccentric, goofy, that's sort of who we are. I mean, mm-hmm. It's one of the things that attracted us to each other. But
right. But sometimes professional help is needed. I would say we have not used it except for my son when we went to see the psychologist. And it's like, what do we do? You know, and he mostly was sitting all of us down together and trying to help us learn how to discipline properly a child who's very difficult. And gave us some interesting ideas, and we did that for a couple of years.
And we weighed those ideas, and then we said, well, maybe we'll try some of this and some of that and some of what this one book said or whatever. But ultimately, it was an autonomous, sort of family, unified mm-hmm. sort of decision.
Right.
About how we were going to go about trying to help this kid who's wild and crazy.
Yeah.
He's just a hyper-energetic. The truth is, I think, this is just me personally, I was a hyper-energetic, spastic kid. You know, you can tell that, can't you? Ran around, got into a lot of trouble, you know, but I grew up in the 70s. And in the 70s, you know, we were free range children in the 70s. And you got turned loose and said, be home when the street lights come on, kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't talk to mom and dad for 10 hours,
right.
You know, and you burn off a lot of energy. The kids today, unfortunately, don't get to do that. And so sometimes there's this weird societal thing that's happened. And so whatever, it's just my opinion. And our kid was definitely like me. You know, it's a miracle he's not an alcoholic.
I know.
The other one might be, but that one's not.
Well, and the other place that we've hired outside professional help is, you know, if you kind of look at, I don't know, society's idea of a marriage with a stay-at-home mom taking care of the house and the kids kind of thing, and then the father makes the money and comes home and takes care of things like the yard and the whatever, like this manly task, right?
Hmm.
Yeah. So,
I can't even use power tools, folks.
Yeah, it's probably dangerous if he had a power tool in his hand. So, thankfully, he is not. There's no problem with me getting outside professional help. So I have a lawn service that makes it gorgeous, and we get the help that we need. And even though I was a stay-at-home mom, sometimes I needed help every 2 weeks with somebody to come clean, to come really do the bathrooms, because I hate them, to really do the deep clean. It just helped out so much. And so those are some other places. When I have advised a sponsee that they may need to think about professional help, usually with a marriage, usually it was because they're having problems communicating and their partner is not in a 12-step program. Sometimes a good venue is to have a third party there so they can get to start talking again, right? Because otherwise I would say, come over to the house, we'll talk to you about the traditions, right? But now I'm talking in a foreign language to this other person
right.
who may be a great dude, but like, you know.
Yeah, he didn't have to do this.
Right, exactly. All right, so tradition 9, the short form. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And part of the long form, all such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service. For true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness.
Yeah, so least possible amount of organization. Doesn't mean there's no organization. We're organized. The checkbook is one example. I was in charge of kind of the household finances until about, I guess in the middle of grad school, right? About,
really?
And, you know, Kathy's like, look, you're... We had a couple of bills that got missed because I was just juggling a lot. She's like, let me take over the finance. I was like, fine, you take it, whatever. By the way, she has a degree in finance. It would make sense that she does the finances. So, and since that time, she's done the finances. And the truth is, I have no idea. She could be pilfering me of every, you know, I have no idea what's going on. And I don't really ask. And I certainly don't criticize whatever financial stuff she's doing. She's pretty good about coming to talk to me about it before we make a big purchase or something like that because we don't make these big decisions without consulting the other one. But, you know, she's a trusted servant. I'm going to let her get on with doing her job, and I'm not going to stand over her and worry and say, well, what did you do, and how are you doing, and what is this, and what kind of interest rate did you get? You know what I'm saying?
He wouldn't care less. All he wants to know is when he goes to the store, he can use his American Express card to get his coffee or whatever it is he wants to get.
That's pretty much it.
That's as much as he wants to know. He wouldn't have any idea about our taxes or nothing. And that's just, it works for us. It's fine. You know, we do have organization, especially when you have little kids. So that's what made it hard when I took Zach to L.A., because now he's having to do it all. Because we had a routine. You know, you kind of get some organization. Like in the morning, okay, I get my daughter in the shower because I like to fix her pretty little hair. And he goes downstairs and he makes her breakfast and her lunch. Then she comes downstairs and eats it and then out the door. It's like this, you know, you got to have some kind of organization, really. But nobody is, because nobody's wearing the pants, nobody gets to design some kind of, like, exact thing and be rigid, I guess, is the thing. And, you know, with children, as you know, right when you have a routine, they have a growth spurt, things change, they go to a different school, and now your routine changes. So, man, with kids, you have got to learn to not be so tied to your schedule. And to, I mean, because you thought this is how your day was going to go, and then you got the call they're sick, and now everything's out the window, and now you got to change this, change that. So we have some organization that works for us.
But there's a lot of flexibility built into it.
That's right.
That's right.
And then?
Oh, yeah, the contracts. Again, so this is kind of speaking to the idea of there ain't no guarantees that it's going to work, you know, and it's stupid to try to make it. So, I mean, when Kathy relapsed, I got all this amazing good advice about what you should do about your spouse who's relapsed, you know?
You need to go to Al-Anon.
You need to go to Al-Anon. I'm not a believer in going to Al-Anon if your only qualifier is that your AA spouse is an alcoholic, or some of your friends are alcoholic because you go to AA. I think we sometimes, as alcoholics, we tend to go into Al-Anon with our big personalities and really dramatically change the culture of what's going on in Al-Anon. I don't think it's good for Al-Anon a lot of times. I mean, if someone has a different experience, that's totally fine and valid. But a lot of people wanted me to start going to Al-Anon, and I was like, I ain't going to Al-Anon.
You said, I'll take that under advisement.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I have a sponsor who says, look, John, you got 12 steps. You need to work them a little harder. You don't need 12 more. You know, then you'll have 24 steps you ain't working. Now, let's get you on the 12 you already got, and let's up the game some. You know, and that turned out to be the right advice. But, you know, so one of the suggestions that I got about Kathy after she relapsed was...
Oh, this is a beaut.
Yeah, is you need to draw up a relationship contract that if she relapses again, these are going to be the consequences. And as if I could, like, threaten her into staying sober with some contract about, you know, this is what's going to happen if you take pills again, God dang it.
Oh, I would have loved if you had tried.
But it was just totally ridiculous. I'm sure it would have been beautiful. You probably would have been standing here today.
That's probably right.
I got sidetracked.
Anyway, this is a funny story that we like to tell.
But there was another piece of that story.
So he could have easily tried to organize and manage my own recovery with some kind of ultimatum.
Right, and ultimately, here, and again, my sponsor, when I called my sponsor up, you know, at this time after it came out about her relapse, and she told me all this stuff, and that was a whole funny story in itself, which we don't really have time for, but he said, John, get you a couple more sponsees, pick up a couple more commitments, and get the hell out of the way and let God do whatever he's going to do with her, you know. And really, it was let her do whatever she's going to do with God, you know. Because I think God wants us all happy and joyous and free. But sometimes we're not always willing, are we? You know. And so she was either going to be willing to get with the Spirit or she wasn't. He said, you need to get the hell out of the way and let that happen, whatever's going to happen, and then you'll know what you need to do. You know, and thankfully she did. She got a sponsor. She jumped back in with both feet. She's a better AA member now today. What, 12 years sober today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she ever was. You know?
Yeah, and the other thing he could have done, because I take care of the money, and so that's how, he wouldn't have known that the money was disappearing from the account and that I have the FedEx trucks and UPS trucks delivering pills to my house on a regular basis. I had enough of these scripts coming every 3 or 4 days to use as much as I was using. You know, along the lines of having a contract about I need to sign it and this is what's going to happen, like take over the money.
Yeah.
Put spyware on her computer.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard all these kind of things in AA. Right? Especially caught cheating. Like, you could take that and, like, really become a total crazy person because now you got to watch them all the time or whatever. It can get really insane. And now, not only have I been crazy, but now he is straight up crazy, having to watch everything I do to make sure I'm not going to relapse. And he was like, either you'll relapse or you'll get sober, you know. That's just how it was.
There's a line in our big book in step 10 that says, we've ceased fighting anything and anyone.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to fight for something that, to manage something that I think I have any ability to control in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the advice that I got. That was given, and thankfully I took it.
Right. So tradition 10, just the short form. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy.
So our opinion on outside issues are not allowed to disrupt the family unity. It's as simple as that, you know? I mean, sometimes, you know, couples they're on opposite ends of the political spectrum. That's not that common. Most people kind of pair up with the same kind of person that they're, you know, in some of these opinions. Sometimes someone might have a really strong opinion about this or that religious thing, or this or that spiritual thing, or this or that social thing. You know, it's just like in AA. I don't come into Alcoholics Anonymous with a political t-shirt on, saying I support this candidate. I just don't wear that stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it just immediately divides me from other people in the room who are on the opposite. It's amazing. Mostly that's never happened in AA, right? Mostly we come in here and no one knows really who believes what or who goes to which church. And that's one of the huge strengths of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why would I let things like that creep into my marriage? You know, why would I say, well, that's what you and your crony friends think about such and such. You know, I mean, that's really going to be helpful for the marriage, right?
Right, right. But sometimes we do disagree on more inside issues, right? Like what to do about Parker back in the day.
Right.
And that was one of the big fights we had, you know. I was trying to get him out of my house and back into school. Or he was getting asked to leave the school, so I was looking for yet another school. And he was like, I really think he's not ready to be in school. I really think he needs to come home again. And I said, I really think you're setting me up for a relapse. I think you're putting me in a corner, you know. Ultimately, he was right, and I'm really glad that I came to see that because he was not ready. It was just going to be the same old, same old. But, you know, we try to have constructive conversations, respectful conversations, even when we're on completely different sides of an issue. And hopefully we get to be back to that unit that we're unified and can go forward. I mean, somebody's going to have to be willing to be wrong, to compromise somehow, and just go for it and try. Thankfully, I was wrong in that, and I got on board with what he wanted, gritting my teeth, but using a program finally, and it turned out fine.
A big part of this is gossip, the gossip thing. You know, we don't gossip in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we do share privately with a few people about our deep concerns about what my wife is doing. I'm really worried she might drink again. You know, let me tell you what she did. Or we share stuff in meetings that inappropriately. Some people have said they have separate home groups from their spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever, so that they can be able to share what they need to share in meetings. We've been taught that I share those big important things with my sponsor and I bring the solution to the meeting.
Right.
It's a different way of doing things. I don't think I need to be airing my dirty laundry about my wife in the meeting. Whether she's in the room or not, whether we have separate home groups or not. We have had the same exact home group the entire time that we've been married. We have always been in four different home groups in the 25 years that we've been together, and we've always been in the same home groups. And we have tended to go to home groups that were big book studies and speaker meetings and not a lot of open discussion meetings. You know, and the ones that did have open discussion meetings are very directed, like, let's talk about step 4 tonight. You know, let's talk about step 3 tonight. Let's talk about step 10. You know, there's not a lot of room for, let me tell you, step 10, that makes me think about what a bitch my wife is. You know, there's not a lot of room for that, you know? And that's just the way we've been coached to do this.
I can't, even if I'm frustrated, I might call my sponsor, but I might pull my best friend from the meeting and say, hey, I need to talk to you about something. And it may be something that I'm really mad at him about. It's fine. Those are healthy relationships. It should be like that. But for me to do that with a whole bunch of people from my home group, just because I'm aggravated, now I'm making our home group an unsafe place for John to come. Because now people are looking at him sideways. Because I can present a case to you, and then you'll go, he is an asshole.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Right. I don't actually just report things, right? I slander.
Oh, I put a nice spin on it.
I'm like a terrible news reporter who tells the story in a way to get a certain response that I want in advance, right?
Exactly. I need to be my partner's biggest champion outside the home and supportive and loving to him. You know, I have literally watched this kind of thing in my home group where a couple was having problems and one of the people had to stop coming. It was so bad because they aired their dirty laundry to everybody and now everybody's looking at the other person sideways. And it's like, yeah, don't do that, guys. It's really not, it's not helpful to anybody. All right.
11.
Christian 11. Short form. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. But part of the long form, our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us.
Yeah, this is a lot about being a power of attraction in our personal lives. Individually, we can be a power of attraction. We've all heard it said in AA, you might be the only big book that somebody ever sees, and that's really true. And so we all need to kind of watch our P's and Q's when we're going about our business in life, because especially once people come to know, oh, that guy's sober, or that guy's in AA, or that guy's, you know, whatever, he's a sober guy. Same thing with marriages, same thing with couples. We were attracted to Dennis and Barbara, you know, because, and we spent a lot of time in their company, because they were just so completely gung-ho for Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were so completely in love with each other. And they were zany, and they were goofy, and, you know, it was just, they were that AA couple that we've all seen, and their joy to be around. You want to be, they opened up their home. Mm-hmm. They always had, we would be at Dennis and Barbara's house. We were living out of state. We came back for a visit. We go over to their house. We drop in, knock, knock, knock. Yeah, come on in. And we're sitting down in the living room. We're having a cigarette and a cup of coffee. And then the back door opens up. Five people walk in. They start a pot of coffee going in the kitchen. And they come in. Hey, guys, we just came back from the meeting. And people were just in and out of that house like that all the time. Not knocking on the door. It was an AA house. It was filled with AA love, and there was always somebody up in one of the bedrooms talking, just doing a fist step with somebody, or, you know, counseling them through a breakup, or, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. It was just, that was the house that it was, and it was a huge power of attraction, and we wanted to have that kind of marriage.
Well, they told us, open up your home and let people see how you live, right? How many times, it's real easy to zip up in an AA recovery suit when you pull up at the meeting. And then you go in, it looks all shiny and pretty. Or everything you post on Facebook has all those inspirational messages, and it looks so pretty. And then, but there's a big abyss that opens between what's really going on. And so, you know, good, bad, or ugly, we've had lots of AAs come and live in our home. There's people in and out all the time. You know, my kids, I mean, here's the thing, is that even if one of my children's birthdays fell on a Thursday or Saturday night when my home group meets, we're at the meeting. They knew from this little, we'll celebrate your birthday either the day before or day after. Like, nothing trumps the home group.
Yeah, and that was planned in advance. Hey, we're celebrating your birthday on Friday the 11th, even though it's on the 10th. You know, we're all going to go to this, we're going to go to do that, we're going to take this party and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, our 23rd wedding anniversary, it's always the weekend of Memorial Day, happened to fall on a Saturday night this year. I had to chair the meeting. Like, we were there, same old thing, you know. But we make it special.
We went out on Friday.
Yeah, we make it special, a different sort of day. I think it was, I'm so glad that we do have a home that we have alcoholics in and out all the time. My kids have never known anything different. They may need this program one day. I mean, the idea sounds like, oh God, I don't want to stay in all these meetings and all this stuff. But I think when I've asked them about it, they see the people that I hang out with in AA, my sponsees, different things, are pretty cool people. I don't think they have a bad idea of AA. They think it's boring or something, and they hope they never have to come here. They don't know what we do, but it's never not been a part of their life. We've had meetings in our home several times. It's just, we just keep on rocking along. And we've had sponsees that have come to us to ask us to sponsor them because of what our marriage looks like. So that's kind of cool.
And the flip side of that is that, so I sponsor a lot of guys. Kathy sponsors a lot of gals. We have a big New Year's Eve party at our house every single New Year's Eve. We've been doing it forever. I mean, 100 people come to my house on New Year's Eve. I cook chili for all of them. And I'm not good with power tools, but I'm good with chili. We have a sponsee Christmas party every year for just the people that we sponsor. You know, the guys that I sponsor and their kids or wives, whatever, and vice versa for her sponsees. And over, I don't know, last 12 years, what is it? Five or six marriages have resulted from my sponsees marrying her sponsees. And it's a really nifty deal. And, mm-hmm. and this last New Year's Eve, one of my grand sponsees called me up and said, hey, man, would it be rude or interfering with your party in any way if I proposed to my girlfriend at your New Year's Eve
Who's
party?
Also a member of Home Group.
That is maybe the coolest mm-hmm. thing that I have ever been asked. Somebody wanted to get engaged at my house, at our New Year's Eve party, and then they had the sensitivity to say, would that be taken away from the party in some way? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and this is a kid that I don't sponsor. I sponsor his sponsor, and I see it trickle down to him, and he's a really solid member of the group these days, and his wife is a really, yeah, they're married now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
wife,
yeah.
Yeah,
they're doing
really
good.
Solid. That was just a,
they're doing good.
That was a cool deal, man. I was like, hell yeah, did you get me engaged at my party? Come on, we're going to talk about how to do it. I'm going to get everyone quieted down. Then we're going to set the fireworks off after that. And that's
very,
exactly
very
what we
cute.
Did, too.
All right, so tradition 12. The short form, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Mm. And part of the long form, or the long form. And finally, we at Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all.
So we've all heard the expression, principles before personalities, many, many times, right? And I think most of us, if we're honest, and this is certainly the truth for me, I've always used it this way. Well, I'm just going to put my principles ahead of that screwed up person's messed up personality. You know? But I think the real deal in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I'm going to put AA principles over and above my screwed up personality. Mm-hmm. That's the real deal, man.
Right. You know the literature is very clear. They talk about, in AA Comes of Age, about Dr. Bob, and he was dying of cancer, and he had helped so many alcoholics in that area, and they wanted to have a really cool monument built to him. Because they were so grateful.
Big mausoleum thing.
Yeah, they were so grateful. He goes, oh, absolutely not. He said, I just want a regular, nondescript tombstone with my name on it, you know, stuff. I don't want anything about that, about AA. So even in death, he wanted to remain humble, right? All the literature you read about this is really that I must put spiritual principles above my own personality. It's the only one that wants me dead. Right? I don't get to. It's not about smugly putting these principles over your screwed up personality. It's my own. Right? It's about my own strivings for power and prestige and importance and self stuff. You know. So if you look at it that way with your home group, it's real easy to see how that would be the thing here. I can't smugly walk around thinking I'm going to put spiritual principles against his messed up personality and vice versa.
Look at him.
Right.
And ultimately, it's a humility thing. And really, ultimately, anonymity is a humility thing. And ultimately, our recovery process is a humility thing. AA is all about humility. And you talked about it so well this morning. Your talk about my ego grows back. Oh, God. And when you get a few years sober, and now people are asking you to talk some more, and people are asking you to do workshops, and, you know, you got a big home group, and, you know, you might have to fly halfway across the country to speak at a conference, and you know, and now you got some money because you've got an education, and you know, you go, look what I've done. Aren't I cool?
Well, the ego has an amazing ability to take the fruits and the wonderful things of Alcoholics Anonymous and use them to kill me. I really need to be just another bozo on the bus, like really, you know. And if somebody, anything that blows up my ego, I have to balance it out somehow. Like if I'm asked to speak at a conference, it's really easy to think you're really self-important. That's pretty amazing, right?
How spiritual I am.
I balance that out by going to the jail where those people couldn't care less about me. I'm just some AA do-gooder in here going, nyack, 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 nyack. They could. It's a balancing act, right? To try to keep my ego in check, because just like a toilet, you can flush it, but it always fills back up again. You know? And sometimes it overflows, you know? I don't know if we have really any time for questions, and people get so tired of sitting. So I think what we're going to do is wrap it up by saying the Lord's Prayer. And anybody who wanted to ask a question or whatever, come see us, because we've got some more time today before he puts on his monkey suit and speaks in a little bit. So
thanks y'all for listening.